Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're going to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 4th chapter, and I'm going to do text 27 and 28. And since it's not up on the board, I'll just chant it. Okay, so text 27. Yada deveshu vedeshu goshu vipreshu sarushu dharme mayi chavidvesha sava ashuvanashiti. Translation. When one is this is Lord Krishna speaking. Well, yeah, Krishna speaking. When one is envious of the demigods who represent the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of the Vedas, which give all knowledge, of the cows, brahmanas, Vaishnavas, and religious principles, and ultimately of me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he and his civilization will be vanquished without delay. I'll give you a little background information here. What's going on is that the various demigods who are controlling different things like Varuna, Agni, etc., they had it. They've had it up to here. They cannot tolerate Hiranyakasipu anymore. He's basically in control of the whole universe. He's taken over all their functions. You know, it's like, you know, Agni's in charge of fire, Varuna's in charge of the waters, Vayu's in charge. Hiranyakasipu's taken over everything, somehow or another, by his, you know, the austerities that he did, he got that powerful. And not only that, except for Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, everybody is kowtowing to Hiranyakasipu. Because he's, even Narada Muni, and he admits it himself in some text there. So that's how powerful he is. And was Hiranyakasipu happy with that? Was he, you know, was he, now he was okay, now he's in control of everything? No. It says he was chastising them very severely for no reason at all. No, so he's making life hell for everybody. He was in control of everything. He took over everything. And he's making life hell for absolutely everybody, even the most powerful demigods, short of just Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. So that's the situation. So it got to the point where the demigods just decided, I can't take this anymore. It was like intolerable. So it describes that what they did was they started to meditate. And basically it says they didn't sleep, they didn't eat, and they just started doing this meditation, you know, praying to Krishna, please help, basically. And what happened was they heard a voice from the sky, basically. That's how it's described. And that this is one of the statements that the voice of Lord Vishnu or Krishna said. So, and the next thing he said was, Nirvairaya prasantaya swasutaya mahatmane praradaya yadadruyed danishyepi varorjitam. Translation. When Hiranyakasipu teases the great devotee Prahlad, his own son, who is peaceful and sober and who has no enemy, I shall kill Hiranyakasipu immediately, despite the benedictions of Brahma. So, of course, he does more than tease him. That's like that would be a euphemism. That's like almost flowery language. He attempted to kill him. He tortured him in an attempt to kill him. So he did far more than just tease him. But anyway, purport. Of all sinful activities, an offense to a pure devotee or a Vaishnav is the most severe. An offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnav is so disastrous that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has compared it to a mad elephant that enters a garden and causes great havoc by uprooting many plants and trees. If one is an offender at the lotus feet of a Brahmana or a Vaishnava, his offenses uproot all his auspicious activities. Uproot means no more. In other words, like you can cut, like when you cut the grass, it grows back. Aikatma can give us first-hand testimony of that. He's always out there pruning and cutting, and it goes back. But if you uproot it, that's it. Finished. You see? So that's the point that's being made here, that this offense at the lotus feet of a Brahmana or Vaishnava is so egregious, it's so powerful, that it uproots the results of all the good stuff you did. One should therefore be very careful, get very carefully guard against committing Vaishnava aparad or offenses at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Here the Lord clearly says that although Hiranyakasipu had received benedictions from Lord Brahma, these benedictions would be null and void as soon as he committed an offense at the lotus feet of Pallad Maharaj, his own son. So that was the real reason, you see. Because if somebody wanted to get pedantic and, you know, technical about the whole thing, they could say, well, you know, he got this benediction, and Lord Nisringadev, he killed him like that. But that didn't really, I mean, that's kind of like stretching it, you know. But the real point was, because he was offensive to a Vaishnav, all the benedictions were null and void. He counteracted the, you know. That's the one thing. I mean, the benedictions were like really solid. Lord Brahma gave it. But because of that, this is such a powerful thing that he null and voided all the benefit of all those things that Lord Brahma gave to him. And it goes on. A Vaishnav like Pallad Maharaj is described here as nirvaira, having no enemies. Elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3.5.21, it is said, Ajata Satrava Shanta Sarava Sarubhushana. A devotee has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures. And all his characteristics are sublime. And a devotee does not create enmity with anyone. But if someone becomes his enemy, that person will be vanquished by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, despite whatever benedictions he may have received from other sources. Hiranyakasipu was certainly enjoying the fruitful results of his austerities, but here the Lord says that as soon as he committed an offense at the lotus feet of Pallad Maharaj, he would be ruined. One's longevity, opulence, beauty, education, and whatever else one may possess as a result of pious activities cannot protect one if one commits an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Despite whatever one possesses, if one offends the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, he will be vanquished. Om Ginatam Nam Dasharjanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshudam Lalitam Yena Tasmar Shigurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dirati Swapadantikam. So this is one of the most popular pastimes, or, you know, stories, pastimes, however you want to refer to it, in our whole tradition. And there's a reason for that, because the good guys win. You know, here's a situation where the epitome of evil. Epitome means the perfect example of a quality. So Hiranyakasipu is the epitome of evil. This guy and his brother were like rotten to the core. They were, you know, there used to be a song. I forget who was by. Maybe the Doors. Born Under a Bad Star. Remember that song? So that was them. They were born under a bad star. Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha. They were just from the get-go. They were called dyed-in-the-wool demons. You know, couldn't get it out of them. And they acted like that, and they were really making trouble for everybody. They made anybody that was good, they made trouble for them. You know, they made trouble for the Brahmins. They made trouble for the ordinary people. They made trouble for the cows and the animals, and they even uprooted trees. Any tree that had any fruit, uprooted. You know, anything evil they could do, they would do it. That's how bad they were. But the good thing is that here Lord Nisringadev comes along. This is good triumphs over evil. Because ultimately, they were vanquished by Lord Nisringadev. And we like that. We want to hear that. You know, it's like, as human beings, we desire to hear how, yeah, the good guys win. Ultimately, good triumphs over evil. And beyond that, Krishna protects his devotees. You know, Krishna protected Pallad Maharaj. But, anyway, I want to kind of zoom out. And like, look at this pastime, and from the, you know, the zoom out perspective to start off with, then we'll kind of zoom in. Okay, so the origin, the original cause of this whole pastime, you know, just like in philosophy, they always say there's a immediate cause and a remote cause. So the immediate thing is that we get information from the earlier on that Krishna wanted to fight, and that you can't fight in Vaikuntha because, you know, there's no enemies there. So Krishna arranged all this. You know, so that he could enjoy his fighting spirit, which he did. But, you know, that's the what I would say would be the external reason. The internal reason, you know, because you got to go a bit deeper, is that this Krishna creates this whole cosmic manifestation. It's like it's a reform school. thing. In other words, all the living entities that are not prepared to live in submission and compliance to the will of the Lord, who want to try to be happy living in rebellion or in defiance to the will of the Lord, you can't have them in the spiritual world. They're just going to cause a disturbance to all the other devotees and to Krishna. So an arrangement has to be made. And that's this material world. That's all the material universes that Mahavishnu just kind of breathes out and exhales out and inhales in. They're reform schools. You see, basically that's what this material world is. It's just a big, fat reform school. Okay? And so Krishna, you know, his mood is not, serves you right. He's like the parent. You know, the parent always loves the child, even when the child is off and doing all sorts of stupid things. The parent still loves him, but wants to see him reform. So that's Krishna's attitude. Krishna wants to see all the living entities who have misused their free will to, you know, learn a lesson and come back. So that's what this whole material world is all about. Okay, so now, Krishna, in performing this pastime, he's going to, you know, it's preaching. It's more than just Krishna just deciding, you know, I'm getting a little bit bored up here. It'd be nice to have some enemies to fight with. Well, you know, they're not here in Vaikuntha, so let's go to the material world and do it. No, he's got a big purpose, where we figure into the picture. And this is going to be so many lessons. This pastime is lesson laden, you know, so many, if an important lessons for posterity, you know, for human beings from, you know, ages on to learn from and to be enlivened by and help them in their spiritual life. First lesson is, because we know how it starts off, the four Kumaras are trying to visit the Vaikuntha planets and they got stopped by Jai and Vijay, okay? And they were disrespectful. Jai and Vijay were disrespectful to the four Kumaras. And as a result, they got cursed. So the first lesson is, don't judge a book by its cover. You know, you learn that when you're a kid. Even karmis know that. No, that's not talking about books. You know, when your parents told you that, or when your friend told you that, they weren't just telling you to not judge an actual book. It's meant to be, it can be taken literally. Don't judge a book by its cover. But it's meant to be taken metaphorically, figuratively as well, which means don't judge a person by what they look like, you know, by the externals. That's what the Jai and Vijay did. They saw these four little, because the four Kumaras, they kept themselves looking like 4 and 5 year old boys, you know, even though they were the great, great, great sages and they were, you know, the original offspring of Lord Brahma, okay? They were very old. But they judged them by their appearance and they just thought, eh, you know, and they were disrespectful. And as a result, the four Kumaras got, you know, upset and they cursed them. So that's one lesson. And that sort of ties in here with, you know, the purport I just read. Very careful. You got to be very careful to be respectful to not just Brahmins and Vaishnavs, but everybody. You know, be respectful. Yeah. What's the harm? Be respectful. Don't judge people by the appearance. You know, so much of that going on. And anyway, that's a very important lesson. Then, you know, what happened was it was a done deal. In other words, okay, they got cursed and they were given a choice whether they wanted to go to be devotees for 7 lifetimes in the material world or demons for 3. And they chose, okay, we'll be demons for 3 because that's where we'll get back here faster to the Vaikuntha planets. So as a means to that end, you know, to execute the pastime, Kashyapa Muni and Diti, they got involved. Now this is a pastime, but you know, whether they were totally like under yoga maya or not, I won't say. But the point is, overall, it's a pastime. You know, whether Kashyapa Muni and Didi fit in the same category as, say, Arjuna when he was illusioned so the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken, or Maharaj Prickett was illusioned so that, you know, to set the scene for the Bhagavatam to be spoken, I'm not going to say that. But because Prabhupada does point that in one purport, he says Kashyapa Muni was like, he referred to him as a weak man because he couldn't resist when his wife was attempting to seduce him at the wrong time, he wasn't able to resist, you know. So anyway, so that's the point there, that you got to human life is, you know, meant for controlling the senses, And there's one purport in the third canto of Prabhupada. It refers to the human body as Dhamma Sharira. Dhamma means to control, and the body, and Sharira means the body. It's the body that's equipped with the capacity for self-control. That's the human body. And Prabhupada says in that purport that he says one can achieve anything by controlling the senses. Anything. And one of the proofs of that is like, well, Harani Kasipu. I mean, I guess he can be used as a good example for something. Look how powerful he got, because he just decided, you know, to control the senses, and he became so. It's like the law of the universe, practically, you know. You perform austerity, you become powerful. Dhruva Maharaj is another example, but in a much more positive way. But, so Kashyap Muni, he didn't control the senses. He didn't, he succumbed to temptation. And look what happened. Heavy consequences, you know. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu were born as demons like that. And he foretold his wife that was going to happen. Sure enough, that's what happened. So they were bad from the word go, as I said. They were terrorizing the universe. You know, even from their birth, they just grew to big, powerful, demoniac beings, right? And, they just had that mentality right from the beginning, right? Now, another interesting point. Just an insight into the character of Hiranyakasipu, but you know, how just to give you an idea how demonic he was. People get angry, people can be ambitious, but you know, there's a limit. But at least in the case of Hiranyakasipu, it seemed to be like no limit, and no his demoniac desires always seemed to be able to eclipse his reason and his sense of what was right and wrong. I'll give you an example, like. His brother, Hiranyaksha, they were like this. They were like two peas in a pod, Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha. Right? They were twins. And they were like, literally, like two peas in a pod. So, in the early part of the pastime, when Hiranyakasipu was trying to take over the universe, basically, Hiranyaksha was kind of like his right-hand man. So he was going around and, you know, he was challenging all these different demigods, and they couldn't fight with him. He challenged Varuna, and Varuna kind of said, no, you know, I'm too old for this kind of thing now. But, you should go challenge Vishnu. There's a good match for you, you know. And so he did. He did. He sought out Lord Varaha, who I think had just finished taking the earth out of the Garbhadak Ocean or something like that. Anyway, he challenged him. He sought out the fight. And it was a fair fight. You know, it was so much so that I think he got his club knocked out of his hand a couple times, Hiranyaksha, and Lord Vishnu said, okay, take it back. So it's a completely fair fight, and Hiranyaksha lost. See? So in one sense, but Hiranyakasipu, he held a grudge for that. He couldn't get over that. You know, his brother was, you know, some sort of a chachriya, right? He lost in a fair fight. He instigated the fight, and he lost. So, you know, he let it go, but he couldn't. That to him was like, you know, that was the worst thing. And he hated Vishnu, basically, from that point onwards. So much so that, which is unreasonable, because as I said, his brother instigated the fight. And he lost. Right? But he hated Vishnu so much so that when his child, who 5-year-old son, who, if you remember the pastime, he at one point, you know, this is when he'd already been taught a lot by Sanda and Amarka, the sons of... what's his name? Sukracharya. They were his two sons, and they were acting as Gurukul teachers, basically. So after, you know, being taught for a while, Hiranyakasipu called for Prahlad Maharaj and had him sit on his lap, and he was very affectionate towards him. You know, he was very affectionate towards him. It said he was like, he was, you know, smelling his head and rubbing his head and, you know, teary-eyed. And, you know, he felt a lot of affection for his son. It was his oldest son, Prahlad Maharaj. So he said, okay, son, please, you know, now you've been taught for quite a long time from these, teachers, and what's the best thing you've learned? And, he told him, well, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padam, like that, you know, devotional service to Krishna. And his father went, devotional service? And he got so outraged that he threw him off his lap. He threw him off his lap. And that was like, a reasonable person would have went, well, I'm always thinking of him as my enemy, but he's my son, who's just an innocent, complete. By the way, I mentioned that Hiranyakasipu is the epitome of evil, but Prahlad Maharaj, epitome meaning that, you know, the perfect example of equality. And Prahlad Maharaj, he's the diametrically opposite end of the spectrum personality. He's the epitome of virtue and devotion, all the good things. He's the epitome of that. Innocent 5-year-old boy, devotee, right from the, you know, from even before he was born. I've been, you know that story, right? How at one point when Hiranyakasipu went off to perform the austerities to get the benedictions from Brahma to become unlimitedly powerful, the demigods thought, okay, here's our chance. You know, because he'd already kind of got a lot of control. Demigods, so here's our chance to, you know, while he's away, get back. So they attacked the demons with unprecedented force, right? And they actually were successful. They drove the demons out from what they had already captured, Indra's palace and so forth and so on. They regained some control. And they also captured Hiranyakasipu's wife, Kayadu. And she was pregnant. She was pregnant. So their idea was they were hauling her off. You know, they captured her and they were going to keep her. And when her son was born, they were going to kill him because they figured, you know, like father, like son. This is Hiranyakasipu's son. He's going to be just like his father. So we'll wait till she's born and wait till he's born and then we'll kill him. And they were dragging her off. And Narada Muni just happened to, it's described, he was without engagement. He just happened to be wandering by, you know. And he noticed what was going on. He said, hey, what are you doing? And they described him. They explained to him what I just said. And he said, no, you got it all wrong. He said, what do you mean? He said, that, first of all, you're not going to be able to kill that child. That there's a great devotee there. But he said, that's Hiranyakasipu's son. He said, yeah, I know, but he's a great devotee. Take it, believe me. He's a nichisitta. You're not going to be able to kill him even if you try it anyway. And they said, oh. And they accepted it, which is a pretty far out thing to, when you think about it, because you know here was all these demigods, they're pretty elevated personalities, and they captured her and with great difficulty. But Narada Muni just said that, and you know, because they had such respect for the parampara, they had respect, and based just on his word, he didn't have to argue with them or prove anything. It just was like one statement, boom, and they go, okay. They accepted it, so much so that they didn't like grudgingly hand her over to him. They happily turned her over to the custody of Narada Muni, and then they circumambulated her 3 times because a great pure devotee was in her womb like that. And then, of course, Narada Muni took Prahlad Maharaj and his mother to the ashram where he instructed him in devotional service. He instructed her in devotional service. She forgot everything, but he remembered everything, even in the womb, like that, so, which is pretty amazing. So anyway, getting back to the point there, where was I? Yeah. Lost my train of thought there. Oh yeah, so Hiranyakasipu was what? Yeah, he threw him off his lap, and then he ordered him to be killed. You know, he ordered him to be killed. I mean, just this guy had like zero sensitivity, and they tried to kill Prahlad. They tried to kill him. It's about a half a dozen ways I mentioned, but in the introduction to the chapter, it says in thousands of ways. They just, for one thing after they were just trying to kill him, couldn't do it. Not only couldn't kill him, but they couldn't even hurt him. And Hiranyakasipu was getting nervous. You know, he was getting pretty nervous because what the heck is going on here? How come we can't kill this 5-year-old kid who's our enemy? You know, because he considered him at this point as an enemy because he was a devotee of the enemy. My enemy's enemy, my enemy's friend is my enemy, like that psychology, that logic. So he's pretty upset about that. But anyway, so getting now to this point here, you know, the main part of the story here. Okay, so, you know, they tried to kill him, and they couldn't. This is the point. After thousands of attempts, they couldn't kill him. And Hiranyakasipu was, I mean, as powerful as he was, and he was powerful, he just used to have to move his eyebrows, and everybody would go like, you know. Somebody was telling me, that I think it was Dave Rudd, that he just moved his eyebrows, and the sun, if it was too hot, it would cool down. If it was too cool, it would. That's how much control he had, and that's how much in fear everybody was of him, that they were just like, yeah, you know, what can we, like that. Okay, but he was really, now he was really getting anxiety and nervous because he could see that this Prahlad had some super, extraordinary supernatural powers like that. And so anyway, so he was in anxiety. And he was like, just like Kamsa was in anxiety. You know, Kamsa was killing all the children and everything like that. But at the same time, he always remembered that I'm going to be killed by Vishnu. I know that's predictions there. And he was kind of freaked out about it. Hiranyakasipu was kind of developing that kind of mentality at this point. Anyway, so Sanda and Amarka approached him and said, hey, look, don't, you know, you're Hiranyakasipu, you're so powerful. You conquered the whole universe. Don't worry. Just don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. We'll put him back in the Gurukul. And, you know, we'll keep teaching him and everything like that. And then when our father comes, Sukracharya, he was away, whatever. And when he comes, we'll engage him in the service of Sukracharya, and he'll change. Don't worry. He'll grow out of this, you know. So Hiranyakasipu went along with that, and he handed him back over to Sandanamarca, and they tried to do what they, you know, tried to convert him into a demon. But what happened was Prahlad Maharaj, he took the opportunity to preach to all the other kids in the Gurukul. You know, as soon as Sandanamarca would kind of go, he would take that opportunity and he would start preaching to the other kids. And they could see that he was somebody special. You know, it wasn't like he had to really canvass very much. They could appreciate that, wow, Prahlad's special. And they really were taking shelter of him, and they were getting... They were getting transformed. You know, they were becoming devotees themselves. So then at some point, Sandanamarca kind of could see what was going on. They, you know, we've got a problem here. You know, not only are we not turning Prahlad into a demon, but he's turning all the other students into devotees. So then they took him back to his father again. And then they complained. They said, hey, you know, what happened? And his father asked him a question. You know, where do you get your power anyway? From the same place as you get yours, from Krishna. You know, there's like a dialogue. Something happened. And Hiranyakasipu at first was accused Sanda and Amarka, or Sanda, the older of the two. And he said, you know, just see, I trusted you. I can't remember the exact words, but, you know, it was something like, I trusted you, but you betrayed me too. And, you know, I'm going to get you. And then he defended himself. He basically said, hey, no, it's not me. Believe me, I did everything I was supposed to do. Your son is just like this. You know, he's like that. He's naturally a devotee of Krishna. There's nothing that, you know, I did everything I possibly could to dissuade him from that way of thinking, but it's just, he's like that. And Hiranyakasipu knew he was right. You know, as crazy as he was, he could understand that. So then that's when he asked Prahlad Maharaj, okay, you know, you think you're so powerful, you think you're so great, where do you get your power from? And, you know, there's the final scene where he's, you know, ranting and raving, basically, and threatening Prahlad, menacing looks, etc. And Prahlad's just answering him very, you know, equipoised and brilliantly, intelligently, you know, famous verses of the Bhagavatam. I'll read you this couple of verses here. It says, after some time, the teacher, Sandanamarca, thought that Prahlad Maharaj was sufficiently educated in diplomatic affairs, of pacifying leaders, appeasing them by giving them lucrative posts, dividing and ruling over them, and punishing them in cases of disobedience. Then one day, after Prahlad's mother had personally washed the boy and dressed him nicely with sufficient ornaments, they presented him before his father. When Hiranyakasipu saw that his child had fallen at his feet and was offering obeisances as an affectionate father, he immediately began showering blessings upon the child and embraced him with both arms. A father naturally feels happy to embrace his son. And Hiranyakasipu became very happy in this way. Narada Muni continued. Let me make sure this is the right place. Oh, this is earlier on, but it's... Okay, I lost my bookmark there, but... Here it goes. Okay. When Hiranyakasipu understood the entire situation, he was extremely angry, so much so that his body trembled. Thus he finally decided to kill his son, Prahlad. Hiranyakasipu was by nature very cruel, and feeling insulted, he began hissing like a snake trampled upon someone's foot, by someone's foot. His son, Prahlad, was peaceful, mild, and gentle. His senses were under control, and he stood before Hiranyakasipu with folded hands. According to Prahlad's age and behavior, he was not to be chastised. Yet, with staring, crooked eyes, Hiranyakasipu rebuked him with the following harsh words. Hiranyakasipu said, "O most impudent, most unintelligent, disruptor of the family, O lowest of mankind, you have violated my power to rule you, and therefore you are an obstinate fool. Today I shall send you to the place of Yamaraj. My son, Prahlad, you rascal, you know that when I am angry, all the planets of the three worlds tremble, along with their chief rulers. By whose power has a rascal like you become so impudent that you appear fearless and overstep my power to rule you?" So this is the final scene, basically, before Lord Nrisimhadeva appears. Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear king, the source of my strength, of which you are asking, is also the source of yours. Indeed, the original source of all kinds of strength is one. He is not only your strength or mine, but the only strength for everyone. Without him, no one can get any strength. Without moving, whether moving or not moving, superior or inferior, everyone, including Lord Brahma, is controlled by the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So to the best of my knowledge, I've never heard any of the, Prabhupada or any of the acharyas refer to as commenting that, Prahlad Maharaj was saying this like in a, in the mood of being a wise guy or something like that. In other words, here he was, just very composed, 5 or 6 years old by this point, and his father is kind of like very, threatening and menacing. But he's giving him these brilliant, beautiful, philosophically amazing answers, very cool, calm, and collected, And this is enraging Hiranyakasipu even more, Here I am, ready to kill this kid, and he's spouting off this philosophy in this very cool, calm, and collected way, not even acting like he's afraid or anything like that. Anyway, Prahlad Maharaj goes on to say, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the supreme controller and time factor, is the power of the senses, the power of the mind, the power of the body, and the vital force of the senses. His influence is unlimited." This is exactly what Hiranyakasipu wanted to hear right now. "He is the best of all living entities, the controller of the three modes of material nature. By his own power, he creates this cosmic manifestation, maintains it, and annihilates it also." Prahlad Maharaj continued, "My dear father, please give up your demoniac mentality." This is like the straw that breaks the camel's back here, these next couple of things. "Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equipoised toward everyone. Except for the uncontrolled and misguided mind, there is no enemy within this world. When one sees everyone on the platform of equality, one then comes to the position of worshiping the Lord perfectly. In former times, there were many fools like you who did not conquer the six enemies that steal away the wealth of the body. These fools were very proud, thinking, 'I have conquered all the enemies in all 10 directions.' But if a person is victorious over the six enemies and is equipped toward all living entities, for him, there are no enemies. Enemies are merely imagined by one in ignorance." Hiranyakasipu replied, "You rascal, you are trying to minimize my value as if you were better than me at controlling the senses. This is over-intelligent. I can therefore understand that you desire to die at my hands. For this kind of nonsensical talk is indulged in by those about to die. O most unfortunate Prahlad, you have always described a supreme being other than me, a supreme being who is above everything, who is the controller of everyone, and who is all-pervading. But where is he? If he is everywhere, then why is he not present before me in this pillar?" Here it comes. "Because you are speaking as so much nonsense, I shall now sever your head from your body. Now let me see your most worshipful God come to protect you. I want to see it." Being obsessed with anger, Hiranyakasipu, who is very great in bodily strength, thus chastises his exalted devotee son Prahlad, with harsh words, cursing him again and again. Hiranyakasipu took up his sword, got up from the royal throne, and with great anger struck his fist against the column. In other words, he's lost it, basically. He's so angry. He's sitting on his throne. He pulls out his sword, and he's on his way to try to chop off Prahlad Maharaj's head. And on the way, there's this, you know, in between him, there's a pillar there. And, you know, you got to visualize the whole scene. He's kind of, you know, he's punching the pillar before he's getting ready to chop off his son's head. But he punches the pillar, and says, "Then from within the pillar came a fearful sound, which appeared to crack the covering of the universe. Oh, my dear Yudhisthira, this sound reached even the abodes of the demigods like Lord Brahma. And when the demigods heard it, they thought, 'Oh, now our planets are being destroyed.'" It was a very powerful sound. While showing his extraordinary prowess, Hiranyakasipu, who desired to kill his own son, heard that wonderful, tumultuous sound, which had never been heard before. Upon hearing the sound, the other leaders of the demons were afraid. None of them could find the origin of that sound in the assembly. To prove that the statement of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial, in other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus, the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. Okay, the Sringadevas appeared. Okay. It says, while Hiranyakasipu looked around to find the source of the sound, that wonderful form of the Lord, which could not be ascertained to be either man or lion, emerged from the pillar. In amazement, Hiranyakasipu wondered, "What is this creature that is half man and half lion?" Hiranyakasipu studied the form of the Lord, trying to decide what the form of Nrisimhadev standing before him was. The Lord's form was extremely fearsome because of his angry eyes, which resembled molten gold, his shining mane, which expanded the dimensions of his fearful face. Got to visualize this now. Okay. His deadly teeth, his razor-sharp tongue, which moved about like a dueling sword. His ears were erect and motionless, and his nostrils and gaping mouth appeared like caves of a mountain. His jaws parted fearfully, and his entire body touched the sky. His neck was very short and thick, his chest broad, his waist thin, and the hairs on his body as white as the rays of the moon. His arms, which resembled flanks of soldiers, spread in all directions, and as he killed the demons, rogues and atheists with his conch shell, disc, club, lotus, and other natural weapons. Hiranyakasipu murmured to himself, "Lord Vishnu, who possesses great mystic power, has made this plan to kill me. But what is the use of such an attempt? Who can fight with me?" Thinking like this and taking up his club, Hiranyakasipu attacked the Lord like an elephant. So, that's pretty far out. I don't know, has anybody ever been in the presence of a lion? You get scared. I remember I was in Australia, and I was doing Sankirtan at a fair, like a state fair or something like that. It wasn't open. Well, it was around, but there's a circus there, but it wasn't actually open. It was in the afternoon, but I kind of snuck in. And I went to, and I saw, oh, look. At first I said, it was about the distance from here to the door. It was a cage, and it was like a lion's cage. So I thought, I could see the, you know, steel bars and everything like that. So I thought, I'll go over there. I'll check this out, you know. So I went over, and I was standing, like, you know, outside the cage. Actually, even be honest with you, even when I got about from here to there, the lion was in the cage, and he was pacing back and forth, and he wasn't happy. He was kind of growling. You know, he wasn't like, but it was scary. It was scary. I mean, just being that close, you know. And it was behind bars. It was behind steel bars. But you know, with my intelligence, I knew I'm safe. I'm okay. The thing's behind steel bars. Look at him. But I didn't want to get. I mean, I don't even think I went right up to the cage. As much as I, you know, despite, and there's this really, this thing that should have scared Hiranyakasipu, but anyway, somehow or another he didn't get scared. But it's a very fearful appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev. Okay, so anyway, just as a small insect falls forcefully into a fire and the insignificant creature becomes invisible, when Hiranyakasipu attacked the Lord, who was full of effulgence, Hiranyakasipu became invisible. This is not at all astonishing, for the Lord is always situated in pure goodness. Formerly, during creation, he entered the dark universe and illuminated it by his spiritual effulgence. Thereafter, the great demon Hiranyakasipu, who was extremely angry, swiftly attacked Nrisimhadev with his club and began to beat him. Lord Nrisimhadev, however, captured the great demon along with his club, just as Garuda might capture a great snake. O Yudhisthira, the great son of Bharat, O Yudhisthira, O great son of Bharat, when Lord Nrisimhadev gave Hiranyakasipu a chance to slip from his hand, just as Garuda sometimes plays with a snake, he lets it slip from his mouth, the demigods who had lost their abodes and who were hiding behind the clouds for fear of the demon did not consider the incident very good. Indeed, they were perturbed. You've probably seen that, how like a cat plays with a mouse or something like that. So that's basically what Lord Sringa was doing. But anyway, but the demigods didn't think it was such a good thing. When Hiranyakasipu was freed from the hands of Nrisimhadev, he falsely thought that the Lord was afraid of his prowess. Therefore, after taking a little rest from the fight, he took up his sword and shield and again attacked the Lord with great force. Making a loud, shrill sound of laughter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who was extremely strong and powerful, captured Hiranyakasipu, who was protecting himself with his sword and shield, leaving no gaps open. With the speed of a hawk, Hiranyakasipu moved sometimes in the sky and sometimes on the earth, his eyes closed because of fear of Nrisimhadev's laughter. As a snake captures a mouse, or Garuda captures a venomous snake, Lord Nrisimhadev captured Hiranyakasipu, who could not be pierced even by the thunderbolt of King Indra. As Hiranyakasipu moved his limbs here and there and all around, very much afflicted at being captured, Lord Nrisimhadev placed the demon on his lap, supporting him with his thighs, and in the doorway of the assembly hall, the Lord very easily tore the demon to pieces with the nails of his hand. That would have been a very far-out thing to watch. You know, Hiranyakasipu is kind of moving around very quickly. At one point, Lord Nrisimhadev just kind of goes, and just plucked him out of the sky there, you know, and then, wow, put him on his lap and then just ripped him apart. It says here, Lord Nrisimhadev's mouth and mane were sprinkled with drops of blood, and his fierce eyes, full of anger, were impossible to look at. Licking the edge of his mouth with his tongue, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Nrisimhadev decorated with a garland of intestines taken from Hiranyakasipu's abdomen. I don't know if he did it on purpose or just like in anger, and he's ripping them apart, and his intestines kind of flew up, and you know. So intestines taken from Zam resembled a lion that has just killed an elephant. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had many, many arms, first uprooted Hiranyakasipu's heart and then threw him aside and turned toward the demon's soldiers. Those soldiers had come in thousands to fight with him with raised weapons and were very faithful followers of Hiranyakasipu, but no brains. You know, they just saw how Lord Nrisimhadev just finished off Hiranyakasipu like very easily like that. They're just like moths going into the fire kind of thing. Anyway, they were with raised weapons, very faithfully followers of Hiranyakasipu. But the Lord Nrisimhadev killed all of them merely by the ends of his nails. So they're racing towards him to try to avenge the death of their master. But Lord Nrisimhadev is just going and just killing them all, killing all of them. The hair of Nrisimhadev's head shook, and the clouds, shook the clouds and scattered them here and there. His glaring eyes stole the effulgence of the luminaries in the sky, and his breathing agitated the seas and oceans. Because of his roaring, all the elephants in the world began to cry in fear. Airplanes were thrown into outer space and the upper planetary system by the hair of Lord Nrisimhadev's head. Because of the pressure of the Lord's lotus feet, the earth appeared to slip from its position, and the hills and the mountains sprang up due to his intolerable force. Because of the Lord's bodily effulgence, both the sky and all directions diminished in the natural illumination. It goes on a little bit, but you get the idea here. You know, Lord Nrisimhadev, he emerged and he took care of Hiranyakasipu. So this is, it's more than just, it's an important pastime. It's an important pastime because we're in a similar situation, you know. We're in a similar situation now in the world today. In one of these purports, I can't remember which one, Prabhupada said, you know, and I heard him say it in other places as well, that this material world, as he said now, at present, is being managed by demons and rakshasas. And he says, not very good. You know, he made the point, it's a very dangerous place for, you know, sane human beings, because the world is being managed by demons and rakshasas. So we're in the same position as the inhabitants of the universe were during the time of Hiranyakasipu. It's a smaller, like, you know, there's a smaller version, but we're in the same position. If you stop and think about it, what's going on today is absolutely insane. It's absolutely insane the way human beings are treating each other. But the thing is, this Prabhupada said at one time, he said, actually, 90%, I think it was 90%, most people are innocent, he said. I don't remember if he said 90%. He says the demoniac rulers. It's the leaders, you see? Just like in this COVID-19, we see, you know, if you're following the news, there's so many people coming forward and showing all sorts of, like, good qualities, you know, going, the medical, the first responders and the people in the medical profession, even at the risk of their own health and lives, they're still going there and taking care. So there's a lot of people who are kind of innocent, and they could be, you know, good people if they had good leadership, but they have the opposite. You know, Prabhupada said the world is being managed by demons and rakshasas. So it's a similar thing to what was going on then, you know. There's a lot of good people now, a lot of good people then, but due to the leadership, it's crazy. It's absolutely insane. There's 78 million people living as refugees. These are people who have just get driven out of their country because they're the wrong religion or the wrong ethnicity or something like that. And the country just decides, we don't want you here, and they just push them right out. And they're just living in refugee camps. These refugee camps that are the biggest one is 800,000 people in one, and basically the people are just living in some like kind of shack one on top. That's just human beings. There's probably close to a billion people that are, you know, living below poverty level, starvation. What to speak of animals, how they're treated, what to speak of how the environment. It's absolutely insane the way, you know, what's going on in the world today. And the thing is this, you know, that sensitive people, thoughtful, sensitive people are aware of that, but it's, what can you do? It's kind of like, if you walk around talking about this too much, or at all, you know, some other people, even people who themselves have kind of come to the same conclusions what you're saying, they kind of go, well, it's not what you want to, and it's not practical because you can't do anything about it. It's not, so generally people put themselves in like a survival mode, you know, in other words, this is sensitive and thoughtful people. They're feeling, I know this is crazy, I know, but I got to survive myself, you know. So, and there's nothing I could do. Even if I got all worked up about this, what could I do? What can I do to change the world, right? They're thinking like that. And they just, so therefore they just try to survive somehow. But it doesn't work, you know. It's not good enough. Anyway, to get to the point is that this is a very important pastime because, you know, we need Krishna to come again. We need like another appearance of Nisringadev. You know, there's an expression, Krishna, you did it before, you could do it again. You know, like we have to follow in the footsteps of the demigods who are ruling the universe. And today's a good day to actually do a mini version of that. What did they do? When it got too much, when it became completely intolerable, as I told you, they did a meditation where they were fasting, not sleeping, and praying to Krishna, please come, help us, you know. And he did, you see. So Lord Nisringadev is we could do that. The way we could follow in their footsteps is by taking shelter of the Maha Mantra. Prabhupada says in the previous purport here, I won't read it, I'll just, that the Hare Krishna Mantra, you know, that people, you can experience the presence of the Lord in the transcendental sound vibration. So in other words, in chanting, when you're chanting, Krishna's present. There's Nisringadev potency in the Hare Krishna Mantra. You know, the potency of, because Nam Namakadi Bahudha Nija Sarva Shaktis Tatarpita Niyamatasmarane Nakala. You know, in these transcendental names, I've invested all my transcendental potencies or energies. So Lord Nisringadev potency, Lord Nisringadev for that matter, is there in the Hare Krishna Mantra. So by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra sincerely, you know, by really taking shelter individually and as a movement, if we take shelter, you know, as a race, the human race, take shelter of the Hare Krishna mantra, we can invoke the presence of Lord Nrisimhadev again. And that's what we should, that, I think that's a big part of the message, you know. It's not just something, a story you hear and you go, oh, far out, nice, that's cool. Krishna's far out, he comes as a half lion, half man. No, this is an important lesson here. And that lesson is we have to follow in the footsteps of these, you know, demigods and try to really take shelter of the process of devotional service and try to invoke the presence of Lord Nrisimhadev again here in the world to deal with this crazy situation that we're in. It's a crazy situation, you know. And it's really beyond any... way beyond any individual person to do anything about it. We need, just like the demigods needed, and they're very powerful, they needed intervention from the Supreme Personality of Godhead to deal with that situation. And the same way, we need that. We need intervention from the Supreme Personality of Godhead to deal with the situation, the mess that the world is in today. And the way to get that intervention is to do like the demigods did, sincerely pray for it. And our way of praying for it is to, you know, being serious about our sadhana and engaging in devotional service, you know, trying to follow the instructions of Prabhupada like that. And in this way, we're hopefully be able to, you know, get Lord Nrisimhadev, Krishna, Lord Nrisimhadev like that to kind of get more involved and do something about what's going on today, you know. So that's I think, a significance of today. It's a day to really pray to Lord Nrisimhadev, help us. Help us spread this Krishna consciousness movement. Because without doing that, there is absolutely zero hope. You know, there's a verse, and this is the last thing I'm saying, I'm going to add. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Avritam Gyanam Etena Gyanino Nichavirana Karma Rupena Kunteya Duspadena Lainicha. It's Krishna speaking, and he says, a person's consciousness is never satisfied. Thus a man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and burns like fire. So that's what's going on. People are, you know, due to poor leadership, I mean, you know, let's go with that paradigm that people are basically innocent, but due to being influenced by demons and rakshasas, they're just like, they're in the material concept of life. Material concept of life means you're never satisfied. There's no end to your greed. There's no end to your lust. I'll give you an example. You get people, you know, people like to go on a vacation, right? They live in a vacation. You go around, like, compare, if you go around the, you know, the United States here, there's people like in nice situations. They're not happy with that. They got to go on a cruise. They got to go on to this resort. And when they get there, they're just going to be envious of some billionaire, and they're going to want to, you know. It's the material energy. It's never satisfied. Material desire is never satisfied, and it burns like fire. And it causes you to be unendingly dissatisfied and wanting more money, more lust, more whatever, you know. And it causes you simultaneously to become hard-hearted. You become callous. You become insensitive. You don't care about the other people. You don't care about, because you see, nobody else is caring about them either. So you feel a little bit guilty, but then you think, well, nobody else seems to be doing anything, so I'll just go along with that. And you don't care about other people, what to speak of animals, what to speak of the environment. The environment, that's just not even alive, you know. And it just goes, it's a downward spiral. It's like a, you know, so the only thing that could kind of change this in any way is Krishna, is the potency of the Krishna conscious movement. Krishna says, Daivahyesha gunamayi mamamaya darachaya mamaveya papajante mayamitam tanatite. This divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is insurmountable. No way. It's what I just described, it's just going to get worse. There's only one thing that can counteract this, you know, kalim sattva hadam pumsam, Kali Yuga, destroying all the good qualities of a human being. One thing that can counteract it, and that's mameviye papajante mayamitam tadantite. Krishna says, if you surrender to me, you can cross beyond it. So we have to individually and collectively try to surrender to Krishna. That is the only hope of having anything get any better in our own lives and in the world. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah, David Ruttenberg. terms of the way they surrender to Lord and Shri. Yeah. Prahlad Maharaj was a Nityasiddha. He was a pure devotee from birth, even from before birth. And he was in, although he really gave a lot of credit to Narada Muni, he was in like one of the highest levels of devotional service. So he was not affected. Just like there's that famous verse where he goes, Naivodvide Padadhyam. I think I could find it for you real quick. It gives you a good idea where Prahlad Maharaj was at. 551. This is a verse, one of many, that sort of gives you a really good insight into where Prahlad Maharaj was, where he's situated. He goes, I'll just read the translation. He says, "Oh, best of great personalities," talking to Lord Nisringadeva, "I'm not at all afraid of material existence. Wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities." So he's always in bliss. "My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them." You see, so he was kind of like transcendental. Whereas the demigods were not transcendental. They were, they're Sakama Bhaktas. They're Bhaktas. They acknowledge and are basically obedient to the desires of Lord Vishnu, but they have some material desires, you see. But in this situation, they were forced to just kind of like shift into higher gear and really forget about, well, had no choice, you know. It was that or just keep suffering. So it was good in one sense because it was an impetus for them to get more serious about their devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj, that was not necessary. He wasn't, and it wasn't like because, oh, Hiranyakashipu was making it so horrible that he had to get more serious. No, he was already, he was above and beyond. And he was just a pure devotee. That answer your question? Okay, thank you everybody. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Nisringadev ki jai. Prahlad Maharaj ki jai.